It's time for FLA Law, brought to you by the personal injury attorneys of Peronic, Caulfield, Averill, and Noyes. This hour will be informative, along with taking your questions and comments. Now, here are your hosts for today's show.
That's right. We are live in the WTAN studios with FLA Law, live on the radio. We are here once again. As you know, we are the attorneys of Peronic, Caulfield, Averill, and Noyes Injury Lawyers. And we come to you every Tuesday at 5 o'clock with this live call-in legal talk show. We're excited to, of course, be back here every week so we can answer your legal questions live on the air. And, of course, today you have two experienced attorneys right from our firm, Peronic, Caulfield, Averill, and Noyes. Many of you may know or recognize my voice. My name is Jacqueline Bryant, and I am one of the attorneys at the firm. And I have with me today my esteemed colleague who's joining us. She has, of course, been on the show many, many times, and I'll allow her to introduce herself to you as well.
Oh, yes, Lori Robinson, and I'm very, very happy to be back here talking to people in our Pinellas County audience that might have some questions for us.
Absolutely. And so, as you know, we are personal injury lawyers, so of course that is our realm and area of expertise. So technically I would prefer that's what you ask, but of course this is not just limited to that, right? We both went to law school, as Matt says. So Matthew Noyes always says, we're two lawyers, we all went to law school. You can pretty much throw just about anything at us, and we can of course attempt to answer that question, or at least lead you in the correct direction and try to get you in the road to figuring out the answer to that legal question if it's not something that we know. But with that being said, we are excited to hear from you tonight, and I want to give you all the ways and methods that you can get your question answered today. Of course, the number one way is to just call into the station, and the number is 727-441-3000. Again, that's 727 area code 441-3000. That's the way you call into the station. The lines are open right now. You can call in. Lori and I will answer your legal question live on the air. Of course, you can also tune in to us. We are streaming live on our Facebook page. Hello, Facebook. And we're also on YouTube. So if you don't have Facebook and you would still like to watch the show live and you're unable to get to a radio, then you can just go ahead and go on YouTube and type in Peronic, Caulfield, Averill, and Noyes Injury Lawyers. You'll find our firm's YouTube channel that way, and you can see us streaming live that way. Peronic is spelled P-E-R-E-N-I-C-H. That's the same thing you'll search on Facebook if you'd like to find our live feed. With that being said, if you have legal questions but you prefer not to call in, maybe you're driving or you're doing something where you are able to talk on the phone, you can also type your questions in the comment section on Facebook, and we will also read those out as the show goes on and answer those questions as well. So feel free to get your questions in, like, share, comment, do all those great things, send it out to your families and friends, let them know that FLA Law is on the radio tonight and we are here to answer your legal questions. With that being said, we can get right into it. I know if you've been listening the last few times that I've hosted and also have been with Lori as my guest, we have been talking about current events a lot. I think it's just something that has worked well for the show, and it's kept the conversation quite interesting.
Yes, kind of fun.
And the reason being, you see kind of very interesting accidents and different events that just seem to happen. A lot of times, that's just the way life is. You know, there's just odd occurrences that can happen, and it makes for good conversation. And we can talk about how it might apply to the personal injury realm and the kinds of cases that we handle and the clients that we help. With that being said, there have been several current events that I was able to take a look at. One being, obviously, from today, and it's quite sad and tragic and also reminiscent of something that happened here in the Tampa Bay area several decades ago, but it is the bridge collapse that happened in Baltimore, Maryland.
Yes.
We are in the studio now, and it was just on the TV in front of us, and I'm sure if anyone's, popped by a television today or even pulled up their phone, and they've probably seen this article about the bridge collapse. But in case you didn't, and this is your first time hearing about it, I'm going to read a little bit about it to you over the air, and then Lori and I will kind of discuss some of the various issues that, you know, might come to play based on this specific incident, and then, of course, hypothetical scenarios yes. that might come out of it. But, of course, this was a bridge collapse. Unfortunately, it appears that a container ship was headed towards the bridge. It somehow lost power and ended up ramming into the major bridge. It was apparently the Francis Scott Key Bridge, which is in Baltimore. And the cargo ship lost power somehow early this morning. And before, fortunately, before there was major commute or traffic, it was very, very early in the morning. And that ship basically destroyed the entire span of that bridge, and it just kind of collapsed right into the river. Fortunately, the ship's crew was able to issue a Mayday call that was able to halt traffic from continuing onto the bridge, but unfortunately there were some vehicles that were already on the bridge and some construction workers who apparently were on the bridge as well. From what I understand, it says that the ship was traveling at a very, very rapid speed, and they weren't able to control or stop it. We don't really quite know why or what exactly caused it at this point. But it says that the crash happened at the very, very wee hours of the morning, and six people are still unaccounted for, unfortunately. They were part of a construction crew who had been filling potholes on the bridge this morning. Unfortunately, the company that they work for, the construction workers' employers, have already presumed that they are unfortunately deceased, given the depths of the water and how long it's been since the crash. Fortunately, they were able to rescue a few people and were able to pull individuals from the water. So that is incredibly sad, and it does remind you of the bridge collapse back in the 80s. The Skyway Bridge, right?
Oh, yes.
So I think a lot of people...
So before your time, I remember.
Yeah, I think I might have been a baby.
Yeah, I think so.
I'm not going to age myself. Don't even though I don't remember the exact year.
You might not have even been a baby, because I'm going to guess, I think it might have been the mid-80s, maybe 87.
Then I was a toddler.
A toddler, okay. Okay.
it's something that even though I may not have physically remembered it, the fact that it's very well-known event
very
in
well
our
known
area
event.
And was kind of catastrophic for a lot of people. And I remember even seeing the image from that Skyway Bridge collapse mm-hmm. where there was like a vehicle literally hanging and kind of
yes.
dangling over, you know, just barely falling into the water. And so I can imagine what that was like back then when it actually happened. And so now to have that happen today in 2024
in a very, very large metropolitan area.
Yes,
I think this was
like
very,
Baltimore. Yeah.
And I think that bridge was like a key thoroughfare or something.
It is, apparently.
Area.
It says that last year, over 12 million vehicles used
wow.
that bridge. So
wow.
it's very busy. So, of course, my first thought as a personal injury attorney are the families and loved ones of those that are have been lost in this tragic incident. And my first thought is, what happened with this tanker and why did the functions fail? And can the families make claims against
right.
them? And what are your thoughts on that, Lori?
I think one of the things that it illustrates from our perspective, certainly the value of the legal system mm-hmm. is that as a result of our system that compensates people for damages that arise out of negligence, because we do hold entities, people responsible for acting reasonably, there will be a very thorough investigation of this. Now, there probably
absolutely.
Are regulatory investigations as
sure,
well, obviously.
Sure.
But if it turns out that there was some element of failure in maintenance or some other issue that led to the failures here, now maybe it wasn't, but you know, you have to always be suspicious. So if they're through investigation, and again, I'm sure there will be regulatory investigations that will turn up information, but if there are things that occurred that were a result of negligence, than the families would. We're, of course, speaking in the context of Florida law.
Right, assuming this were Florida,
sure. But this type of thing would generally be true probably in Maryland as well, but we're talking about Florida law. If such a thing had occurred, as with the Skyway, I was, I think, actually at the memorial of the Skyway, I think we talked about this. I think we might have had one of our shows, actually.
Really?
I think we did, maybe.
Okay.
And maybe Matt did, I don't know, but I remember kind of looking at that because it had been so many years ago. But you definitely would have the ability to bring a wrongful death claim.
Exactly.
Related to the negligence, if there was negligence, and recover damages for.
And if any of our listeners know more, we're literally just leaving the office and then coming on the show. So if you know more about this and you want to add to us, feel free to call in, because I don't know a lot about whether they've released what has caused this. Like you said, if
I don't
there
think
is negligence.
So. Right.
I think I saw something that might have suggested there could have been some sort of hack of some kind of their system.
Okay.
So of course, if that's the case, then they may suggest that there was it wasn't foreseeable, and there was maybe nothing that they could have done to prevent it, unless you know maybe they exposed themselves somehow to the hacking.
Oh, that's
you know.
Interesting.
It is. Now I don't know how accurate that is.
Yeah,
I was skimming through a bunch of things. So.
Yeah, and I don't know. You know, and obviously one thing we do know that. Now, for us, it sets up kind of interesting scenarios just to discuss, but obviously in terms of one thing we know as lawyers, you really can't trust any of the first reports.
Absolutely.
Or probably the second or third or fourth. You know,
right.
That's, you know, so we don't really know what caused it. But there could be any number of things. I mean, all I had heard really was something where there'd been like an electrical failure or something.
But that could be true.
You know, that would, you know, so whatever would be the cause, that's something that would have to be discovered, basically.
Right.
Now, if it in fact was something that there was no responsibility on the part of the company, you know, then you're the people that are subject to injury and death and the families, unfortunately, would not have that source of recovery if there was not negligence. But it's something that would have to be looked at, because over the years, you know, certainly many times, if not most, when something fails, there's something at work.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I guess it's the old phrase, where there's smoke, there's fire.
Yes.
Or even what you learn in law school, is it res ipsa loquitur?
Yes. We like being able to say that word, res ipsa loquitur. A great Latin term for the thing speaks for itself.
It speaks for itself, yeah. So, you know, and that, it kind of reminds me of, I want to say, was it about 2 or 3 years ago? That pedestrian walkway that collapsed in South Florida, and
yes,
I don't remember.
Right.
But that was different in the sense that it wasn't hit by some object, but there was actual structural problems with that bridge or that walkway.
Right.
And so I believe there was a negligence in that regard when it came to the construction of that walkway. And I think maybe there had been notice as well of, you know, some integrity issues with that. I, of course, wouldn't see that being the issue here with this particular bridge. There's nothing to suggest that something was wrong with the bridge itself. It sounds like it was just an issue with the tanker losing control.
Right, and which in and of itself does scream out as something. How did that happen?
How did that happen?
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see what, as you said, it'll be thorough investigations from probably various agencies, and different reports will likely be done to determine what exactly happened here. And but I wanted to touch on that the six individuals, the construction crew members. So again, this happened in Baltimore, Maryland. We're not licensed in Maryland, but you know, assuming this situation had happened in Florida, again, we're talking about, we do see the similarity between the Skyway Bridge. Unfortunately, these men were working on this bridge at the time that it collapsed. And in Florida, if you are injured within the course and scope of your employment, then that opens, you know, the potential for a workers' comp claim. And so when there's death in the course and scope of your employment, how does that typically play out in the Florida work?
There is a
death
benefit of $150,000.
Mm-hmm.
So there would be that likelihood in Florida. Seems rather limited, but the workers' comp system is rather limited, but
by its very nature,
right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, but in this scenario, it would, you know, construction workers on the bridge doing their work would certainly, if it were to have occurred in Florida, would
sure.
come within the workers' comp system,
right? And again, the law in Maryland could be very different, and so there may not be that much of a cap as we have here in the state
right.
of Florida. And I obviously hope that those families are able to, you know, pursue the full extent of the law and whatever that might entail. But that's kind of the thought that I had in regards to the bridge collapse incident. And of course, there's the wrongful death and there's potential for workers' comp. We will have to wait and see how that all plays out. I'm sure we'll be hearing more and more about it on the news in the coming days about what exactly occurred. And of course, I'm sure that, you know, families will soon, you know, retain attorneys, and we may hear from them soon.
Well, now, yeah. One other thing that occurs to me just to comment upon is that if we were to suppose that there was some failure to protect the bridge, or...
There you go. Yeah, now you're right. Thinking, Lori.
Yeah. But... Unfortunately, that would like, I mean, it, there could be.
What can you do in
yeah,
that instance?
When it's the
yeah.
government,
yeah.
You know, that what we in Florida, and this I'm sure again would be fairly common in other places, but if things that are at a level of planning where mm-hmm. maybe there should be something
yes.
done, like maybe the channel, they should have done something different with the channel.
So
maybe
that it couldn't approach the bridge in that
something
manner.
Something like that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, there might be things that would develop that might ultimately result in a change in how that bridge is reconstructed.
Sure, absolutely.
But the government itself would likely be protected under the concepts of sovereign immunity, that because there are only certain things that you're permitted to sue the government for.
Exactly.
And the law is very, very restrictive in that because of the concept that if you could sue the government for every time they did something wrong,
right?
it would
they'd
be endless.
Bankrupt, yeah.
We'd be bankrupt, and we'd have no ability to pay for the services that are needed. Anyway, mm-hmm. that's the theory behind all that. But
it is.
So, if there are things that develop in that regard, it would be very interesting. But it would have to be more towards making better improvements in the reconstruction of the bridge.
Absolutely.
But you do see, anything that happens in our world is going to carry with it implications, and if people are injured, particularly in our country and in our state in particular, mm-hmm. there are going to be opportunities for people to pursue justice and hopefully get
exactly.
some compensation for what's occurred in a very tragic circumstance.
Exactly. And you couldn't have said it better. It's a very tragic circumstance. And, of course, although we're discussing the legal discourse about it, we can't forget the human nature of it. And so our hearts go out to the family and those that are all being impacted by this, as it just literally happened this morning. And we're talking about current events, and we have our finger on the pulse. But, of course, we have to be sensitive to the fact that this is very, very tragic for the city of Baltimore and all those that were involved. If you have any questions about what we're discussing, any information or that you'd like to add, feel free to call in. The lines are open. The number is 441-3000. Again, that's 441. I'm sorry, area code 727-441-3000. Call in. Feel free to also leave questions on our Facebook live chat. Happy to read it out over the air. But that's interesting, and again, we'll see how that continues to play out. I'm sure as we go home tonight, we'll see more and more about it on the news. With that being said, we've got more current events.
Okay. So what else has been going on?
What else is new? So this one is, of course, another sad one. They tend to be, unfortunately, in the arena that we work in. This was in Safety Harbor, it looks like. Well, Clearwater. A teenager who was 19 years old was apparently coming home from school and driving at a very high rate of speed. He told the officer that he was trying to hurry up and get home in between classes, and sadly hit a truck that was driven by a 71-year-old man. And unfortunately, that truck flipped, and the driver, the passenger that was in the truck, Mr. Stephen DeMesa of Dunedin, unfortunately passed away. And so I wanted to, again, kind of touch on wrongful death and how it may apply in this situation. Obviously, this was a very young man who was admittedly driving at a high rate of speed and caused this accident. But a lot of times, teenagers are still insured under their parents' policies, and so there may be coverage there to pursue. So we shouldn't just assume young teenager, no coverage. That's not necessarily the case. Let's assume that there is coverage here, that the 71-year-old man's family, wife, spouse, or someone could pursue. What are kind of the parameters when it comes to a wrongful death in the state of Florida, Lori?
Okay, well, again, you know, again, we're looking at negligence, which here they're certainly based on the facts reported. Mm-hmm. There would be negligence, using excessive speed, mm-hmm. and not being under proper control of your vehicle are things that would be considered negligent. And so then the question of wrongful death, the damages that you can recover,
right,
would be a spouse, if there's a surviving spouse. And children would be able, if not a surviving spouse, there would be able to recover for pain and suffering, which is kind of an intangible damage.
Right.
And then if there, now with a person, 71 or so, it's perhaps could be
right.
a retired person, but if you say the individual was younger, and even in this situation, if there is an economic loss,
right.
or say the person was working still, particularly when you see a situation with maybe a younger family,
right.
and you have an individual working, then you can recover for actual economic losses that if you were dependent on that individual, say a spouse
mm-hmm.
that was dependent, or
children.
Minor children mm-hmm. in particular. Yeah. So those damages are things that for wrongful death would be things that we would very often bring a lawsuit, a claim on behalf of the family mm-hmm. to recover. So the other thing to be aware of in these kinds of circumstances is that the statute of limitations, which actually now has gotten is 2 years for pretty much everything
but, now. Yeah,
it used to be that we had a little more time on regular personal injury actions, but wrongful
right.
death has always been two
it's
years.
It's always been
yeah.
2 years, which is still severely limited in
yeah.
my opinion.
Right,
yeah.
right. So it is the kind of thing that if a person is in a situation where a family member, the spouse or parent has been injured or died in this case, then that is right. something that should be reviewed as early as possible
right
to
away.
Determine what you know what the options are.
Exactly right. And I know there are circumstances, and considering that this gentleman is 71 years old, we don't know if he, we could imagine that he probably does not have minor children.
Right.
And then there is a chance that he may not have a spouse. He could, maybe was not married, or maybe his spouse is deceased.
Right.
And so what would be the circumstances then if there are no children and there is no spouse?
If there are no children
mm-hmm.
and no spouse, then there's not going to be a person
who can bring,
who
the
can
claim.
Bring the claim.
That's what I think a lot of people don't realize in the wrongful death realm, unfortunately,
mm-hmm.
about who can actually bring that claim.
Right. And it ends up, I mean, to bring a claim, an actual estate is set up, a personal representative appointed, and the personal representative brings a claim on behalf of the beneficiaries.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And so it would be things like, you know, another element of damage is actually what they call loss of net accumulations
mm-hmm,
to
mm-hmm.
an estate, which is a difficult thing to show unless you're dealing with a situation where the person is still working, at which point you didn't
right.
really be able to show that. But you do have to have beneficiaries, and they're listed specifically in the statute.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Now, interestingly, we have these situations in the context of medical malpractice sometimes. There, no child over 25 can ever bring a claim.
Right.
They have specifically restricted that in the medical
right.
malpractice context. It's an area of the law. There can be a lot of little nuances, so it's always good to review it with lawyers.
That's exactly what I was going to say. There's so many different parts to that you may get confused or may try to exclude yourself and think, oh, we can't bring a claim for this. Don't ever assume that, especially when you have a 2-year statute of limitations. This is the kind of case that you want to act quickly and make sure you consult an attorney right away. Even if you think we may or may not have the ability to bring a claim on behalf of the estate, I would never assume that, and should always give us a call and figure out what your rights may be in the event that there's an accident or negligence that has led to the death of a loved one. So that, unfortunately, that was one of the, another sad one that I found here locally in Pinellas County area. Like I mentioned, it's easy to find these articles because sadly it does happen quite often, and it's not just Tampa Bay area.
No, and you know, I think it's another, I think, good thing about discussing these current events. It just, as I sit here, it occurs to me, it's just it's kind of an opportunity to review. Things we should be careful about.
Yep.
Because, you know, I have a little bit of a funny one. Not that I have a little red sports car, but I'm pretty, I drive, you know, pretty reasonably usually because I've been doing this kind of work for a long time.
Right.
But I know I was coming out of church one Sunday, and I was actually taking Holy Communion to a neighbor, and it's on Belcher, and the speed limit is like 40 or something, and I was right at a certain point, and there's a light, and I popped it right up to 50. And then I saw the police officer. And he pulls behind me. And I mean, I haven't really gotten stopped in a long time, so I just, like, pull over to the side. Uh-huh. And he's, like, you know, motion. He wants me to go down another road. So I do, of course. And then, you know, he walks out, and it's like, you're never supposed to do that. It's been so long. I just thought you're supposed to stop right away. Anyway, he was very nice young man. He probably looked at me and he realized, it'd be like his grandmother or something.
Didn't expect that in the little red sports car.
That was okay with me. But what it reminded me of, because I do actually try to be careful, and he said, you know, just be a little more careful. He was nice about it, you know. It just didn't even give me a warning, just a verbal one. But keep it below 50 again.
Okay.
So, even though we look at speeding, because most of us, I've just confessed, you know, I mean, most of us do go above the speed limit depending on the circumstances, you just don't know what the road conditions are going to present to you.
Absolutely.
And what somebody's going to do. I always remember
you can't predict what other drivers will do.
Right. Yeah. And that, I guess, again, because of what we do. Mm-hmm. We see it all the time. So, I recall my father, when I learned to drive, saying, Lori, always, you know, be a defensive driver. Look for, you know, what's going to happen and how you can get away from it, type thing.
Exactly.
So here, another lesson, which, you know, we just prayers for even for the driver here, because that's so awful.
Yeah,
so awful.
Absolutely.
Certainly didn't intend such a thing, you know. But it's just a little reminder of all these things that can happen. There's so many ways that people can become injured, or obviously even killed. So it's very important to keep that in mind when you're driving and try to stick pretty close to the speed limit.
Yes,
you know,
and
to
stay vigilant.
Yeah,
because you can be very safe, but you can't always predict what may happen around you. Just as a quick example, on the way here, I was, you know, just driving through a short little pathway through a residential neighborhood to get here to the station, and driving at a, you know, slow rate of speed. But then there was a child who was trying to get across, and it's very narrow. It was a very narrow street.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, I was driving very slow, but had I not been, and I had just kind of been cruising through, that could have happened to, you know, been a very tragic thing. So yes, it's always important to be vigilant, to drive defensively, as you said, and, you know, in the event that something does happen and you're safe, you feel like you were driving safely, but the other driver does something that unfortunately causes injury to you, then we are here to help with those kinds of situations. And kind of help you through that. That's what we do. With that being said, it's probably a good time to take a short break. And we still have the lines open. We'd love to hear from you. So after we come back from the break, feel free to give us a call at 727-441-3000. Again, that's 727-441-3000. And we'll be right back after this short commercial break.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
In 1955, the law firm now known as Peronick, Caulfield, Averill, and Noyes made a decision. Instead of taking whatever cases came through their doors, they decided to focus specifically on personal injury. 64 years later, the law firm is one of Clearwater's longest-running personal injury firms. Available 24 hours a day with offices in Clearwater and throughout Tampa Bay, they're ready to put decades of experience to work for you if you or a loved one has been injured in a car accident or injured due to someone's negligence or recklessness. If you feel overwhelmed, uncertain, or unsure about your next steps after being involved in an accident or after a loved one sustained serious injuries due to someone else's negligence, call Peronick, Caulfield, Averill, and Noyes at 727-796-8282 or online at usalaw.com. That's 727-796-8282 or online at usalaw.com. Non-attorney spokesman.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Some people say it was, quote, a black swan event.
And we're back. We're FLA Law on the radio. We are live once again in WTAN studios at 106.1 FM or 1340 AM. Hopefully you've been tuned in the entire show because we have been talking about some really, really great current events, of course, namely the one that happened this morning with the Baltimore Bridge collapse, and we were just chatting about that a little bit off air. But of course, just talking about some other car accidents and things that have happened here locally in our Tampa Bay area. And I think it does make for good conversation. It's educational for our listeners to understand how some of these different scenarios can impact them if they find themselves in these kinds of situations. You have a little bit of insight on what to do. And of course, if you have more questions about it, or you do find yourself in a circumstance, you should call us right away, of course, and consult with a personal injury attorney like ourselves so that you understand exactly what your rights are. With that being said, we're back. The lines are open. The number is 441-3000. That's 727-441-3000. We're here and happy and ready to take your calls. And we're on Facebook live stream and YouTube live stream. Feel free to drop a comment in the chat section, and we'll read it out and answer that on the air as well. Now, with that being said, we had one more current event that we wanted to touch on before we start talking about some other topics. This was in St. Petersburg last Wednesday, it looks like. 4th Street was shut down in St. Petersburg due to a multi-car crash. It looks like St. Petersburg police have reported that several vehicles were involved in a crash on 4th Street North around 83rd Avenue last Wednesday. And there are some photos. You probably can't see them on the air if I held them up to the camera very far. But they were pretty badly mangled.
Oh my gosh, looks terrible.
Very, very badly crashed vehicles. The photos that St. Pete police provided showed at least 3 cars with heavy damage. One car was flipped on its side. Another car was missing its complete front end. They had to close all 4 lanes of the 4th Street for a period of time. Fortunately, in that particular accident, they reported that no one was injured. Now, of course, we know that that can always change. But at the scene, there was no one reporting injuries, and all the officers had to say it was just a big mess in the roadway. So in regards to this big mess in the roadway can also mean a big mess for insurance claims.
Sure.
And all the individuals in the cars and trying to coordinate the coverages and figure out who's liable. It seems like, you know, we have one car flipped, you got one car facing the other direction. It could be a very big investigation as to liability for one. So with that being said, when you have these multi-car crashes where there's multiple vehicles involved, how do these tend to play out when you have a person, let's say a person comes to you and they say, Lori, I was in that accident, there was 4 other cars, people had passengers, I don't know what's going to happen here. How do we approach that, and what tends to happen in those kind of circumstances?
Well, like you said, it's going to take some real sorting out.
Yeah.
And we're going to assume, which very often is the case, that unfortunately there may be some people that do end up having some injuries.
Mm-hmm.
Because what is so often the case is you have an initial accident.
Yeah.
You're hopeful that you don't have mm-hmm. any problem. The adrenaline is flowing.
It's flowing at the scene for sure. Yeah.
And so you may not realize you have a problem until, you know, you get home, and then as the body, as it works, mm-hmm. it's very common to begin to feel pain, and then you may have was more significant problems. So we would, of course, be involved in cases in which there ended up, unfortunately, being some injury to the person.
Right, of course.
Yeah. the insurance principles that we might talk about briefly could apply even if it was just a bunch of property damage cases, which the picture, you know, our audience can't see it, but right. that looks like a demolition derby
it
there.
Does,
that
it
was
does.
Not a pleasant day mm-hmm. for people. But yeah, but in terms of insurance coverage, now, you know, if you have on your own auto policy, you may have and should, if your vehicle warrants it, have the collision coverage.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, which would pay for damage to your vehicle if there's no other coverage to pay for it.
Right, because this investigation could take a while.
Oh, yes.
And
yeah.
trying to determine which policy or which person is going to be at fault could take quite some time. And all that, with this mangled vehicle, you
right.
have no car to drive. It doesn't appear to be drivable.
Right.
So if you don't have collision coverage, you could be waiting quite some time.
Yes, because actually, when you think about the cases that we handle every day, most times property damage issues can be resolved fairly efficiently.
Sure.
But a good percentage of the time, it takes longer. And in something like this, if there's going to be an issue about liability, responsibility, mm-hmm. I mean, it could be months.
Right.
You know, so in that scenario, your best initial protection is obviously going to be your own auto insurance policy with collision coverage.
Right.
You have to pay the deductible, but after it gets all sorted out, you know, hopefully that would work out. Next question, though. So after it sort of gets sorted out, so maybe several different people that are participants in this, they all have their lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
We now have the traffic reports. We've
right.
investigated a little bit what happened. And so now argument.
Maybe there's witnesses.
Yeah, very good.
You
right.
should certainly you know. Be trying to find your own witnesses at the scene whenever possible.
Yes, and it's the kind of thing where, you know, it's a exciting, stressful event, so a lot of times people will
yeah.
not think about that. You should absolutely take pictures with our phones now.
Yes.
We can be our own,
yes.
You know, documentation person.
Right.
And if at least if you get pictures of the cars involved and the positions they're in, that may assist in a later investigation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So those things have to occur. And then ultimately, after there's an investigation so that an assessment can be made, well, who is at fault?
Mm-hmm.
Then the next level is, okay, great. Now we've identified that this particular driver driving this particular car is at fault.
Right.
Yeah. Now we want to know, well, what is the insurance coverage?
Exactly.
And we, you know, the Florida law does require that be disclosed. So
fortunately.
Yes, that is very fortunate. Yeah. I mean, it's to everybody's advantage that it be disclosed.
Exactly.
But
right.
a lot of times people don't look at it that way.
Yeah, there are some non-disclosure states out there where they do not have to tell you what the driver has,
mm-hmm.
which I found very bizarre. I remember handling a case like that once, and we had to request the policy from out of state, and we sent them our form letter
yeah.
with the Florida statute, and they're like, this isn't Florida. We don't have to disclose anything to you. I'm like, what?
Yeah. And it's so stupid because, yeah. so you mean you're going to make me sue you
exactly.
to get the information?
I mean, you know. They're like, well, we have bodily injury coverage, so present your demand, and we'll,
like, so. It's like,
okay.
you know.
So, it was very, I wish I could remember which state it was, but apparently they were a non-disclosure state.
Yeah, so. No, I think, and that kind of illustrates, it just makes things move much more efficiently, obviously,
exactly.
you know,
mm-hmm.
yeah, to have that disclosure information. Then once you've got that, you know, then you can pose a demand, but in a situation like this, there may be multiple demands
mm-hmm.
posed by the individual
exactly.
people involved.
Especially when there could be multiple passengers in one vehicle.
Yes, yeah. very good point there. Right, so you're going to have not just the drivers involved,
mm-hmm.
but all the people in the cars that may also be injured.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Now, this would be, we joke off air about, oh, law school question,
mm-hmm.
you know, so many different possibilities. You know?
Right, right.
Yeah, but, yeah, so, and what happens in situations like this, if there are multiple claims involving the same accident, is it is not uncommon to end up with what we call a global mediation of some
exactly,
sort.
Exactly,
yeah.
right. And especially that, if the coverage is severely limited in the sense that there's maybe a $10,000 policy or $10,000-$20,000 is, and not to get too technical, but those tend to be the smallest policies in the state of Florida that you can purchase. And if the person that's found to be at fault has one of those, that means the most any one person can get out of that claim is $10,000, and that the most that all injured parties can claim is $20,000. So you can imagine how a global mediation may come about very quickly in a situation
yes.
like that, where there's just a very minimal policy.
And the insurance company, they just want to get it over with.
Mm-hmm.
They want to avoid any potential implication that they aren't acting in good faith.
Mm-hmm.
And so how did they divide it up? You guys work it out. You know.
Figure it out. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And that can be, you know, as we've talked before, you know, there are many people have very limited coverage.
Oh,
some,
yeah.
none, but
sadly.
Many have very limited coverage, so that can occur. And in an accident where you got a lot of cars involved, even if you had, you know, basically 100, 300.
Sure.
So the way coverage works, 100,000 per claim,
mm-hmm.
300 total for the accident.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that seems like a lot of coverage, and that is a fairly good amount.
Sure.
You know, but
much better than 10.
Oh, much better than 10. So maybe the example would be better at 25-50, you know,
okay.
to say like, you know. But I mean, so that top number, the total amount, if you've got a lot of vehicles involved,
mm.
and depending on the nature of the injuries people have sustained, it doesn't go that far.
It doesn't. You know? And not to cut you off here, but there, I just had a recent situation where the emergency room bill itself was almost $40,000.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
For an ER visit. And you can imagine if two or three individuals go to the emergency room, not to say that they're all going to be $40,000, but two or three of those individuals in that car accident all go to the ER via ambulance.
Right.
And there's a 25-50 policy, we've got a problem.
Yeah. Right.
So.
Right. Yeah, no, and that's, I think probably the medical bills can be a big issue if
mm-hmm.
there's any kind of significant
mm-hmm.
Injury, because
mm-hmm.
you know, you'd have your PIP that would take care of some, but it isn't going to take care of a $40,000
yeah,
bill.
It doesn't go that far.
No,
yeah.
No. It's so it is a complicated insurance picture, and in a situation like this, there might be contributing causes. Maybe a couple of vehicles would have some
sure.
responsibility.
Right.
A couple of different insurance companies, and now the more. The better opportunity to make a fuller recovery.
Mm-hmm.
But in Florida, there's so many people that do not actually have a lot of liability coverage, which that's the key coverage. You know,
that's
as we've
the key.
Talked
mm-hmm.
about so many times, the what you're actually required to have to get your driver's license is really property damage. You know, it's a basically $10,000 in property damage, and
mm-hmm.
then you have to have your PIP for your medical coverage up to $10,000.
Right.
But that's it. And if you get into an automobile accident, where you know then that you may be required to get $10,000 in liability coverage, but I mean even that obviously is nothing if for any kind of an accident. So
yeah, exactly.
So
and you sit and just to kind of talk about the times that we're in. Depending on who you listen to, some might say that we're in a, you know, a recession of sorts, or an economic downturn, or people are not, you know, in a financial position as good as maybe they were a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
People are carrying a lot more debt these days, and the economy is not the best. And what do you naturally see? People tend to carry less coverage on their policies.
Right, right.
And knowing that is the time to really make sure you're protecting yourself, because what that could translate to is a lot of individuals driving around with that very minimal coverage that you are required to carry, which does not include the bodily injury.
Yes.
And I think we tend to see that happen a lot more when we're in a, you know, recession, if you will, or
sure.
however you want to call it.
Right.
You know, and so you have to take steps to protect yourself when you know that that may be the case. And it was already an issue in our state with people
yes.
not having adequate coverage or not carrying coverage at all, and you know, driving around with lapsed policies or even, you know, even policies that are just very bare minimum. So that's where I think UM obviously comes into play.
Yes.
But before we jump into the UM discussion, I wanted to go back to the global mediation process, because I just want to share that I hate qualifications.
Chocolate.
I don't enjoy them because we're all personal injury lawyers. We all have the same goals. We all have clients to represent, and I feel like it just pits us all against each
other.
Yes,
it's very awkward, yes. I would say.
We're all trying to advocate for our clients. I don't mind beating up on the insurance company's lawyer, but when we all are in the same fight together, it's almost like, you know...
It is kind of awkward because, yeah. You know, each person's going to be arguing. And as lawyers, mm-hmm. we argue passionately for our clients' interests. But I guess there's also an element of realism because ultimately the goal when there's limited coverage is to get some sort of resolution mm-hmm, that mm-hmm. is the best under the circumstances.
Sure.
You know, but.
And the thought is hopefully that as the personal injury attorneys are going to be the best ones to try to figure out a fair resolution as that instead of allowing the insurance company to do it.
Right.
In that regard, I probably would agree. But one thing, to go back to the UM conversation, one thing I don't enjoy about the global situation is that they tend to penalize your client if they have the UM coverage. It's almost like, oh, well, your client was wise enough to purchase this extra coverage, and therefore they should get less of the bodily injury. And I just have never liked that argument.
Well, we don't like that argument if we have the client that's in the better position.
Exactly.
You know.
Now, when our client is unfortunately the one that doesn't have the
UM, I would be making the other argument because it kind of illustrates why uninsured motorist coverage is so important, because mm-hmm. there can be a large, many different situations mm-hmm. in which you're not going to have an easy way to recover damages that are compensation for the damages you've actually sustained.
Right.
And that is, I was going back to what you were saying earlier. I mean, no one thinks they're going to get into an automobile accident. We live it, so we know. But I still, knock on wood, I'm hoping I'm getting home without getting in an auto accident. So,
exactly.
You know, so it's the kind of, and then you look at the expenses, and I'll have to say I noticed my insurance premiums went up this year.
Sure.
Yeah, by, you know, a noticeable amount. And so you can see where people start looking at, well, you know, what am I going to spend the money on, you know.
Inflation and so many things going up.
Right.
People start to cut their budgets.
Right. And look at where they, you know, they can't do everything. So the insurance, which seems kind of abstract to most people, mm-hmm. is one of the things that is probably the first to go or not even be considered in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think that's where just being prudent on your part, those that are listening in the audience,
yes.
That it is so important, is that once you understand what insurance is for, it really is a very wise investment to spend mm-hmm. that little bit of extra to be sure you have some uninsured motorists so that you do have coverage if you get into a situation that causes you significant injury
sure.
or damage.
And it can be devastating to not have it.
Right.
There was one thing that I learned, and it was like a sales slogan when I worked at in retail, but it's so true in the UM context. But I forget what we were trying to sell. I think it was warranties. We were trying to get people to buy warranties, and I was working in retail, and they said, one thing that people say, they're like, no, I won't need it. And you should always respond, it's better to have it and not need it
yes.
than to need it and not have it.
No, that's so true.
And it's always stuck with me when it comes to UM. That is so vitally true, because just imagine if you are in a situation where you've been seriously injured
mm-hmm.
and you have lost time from work or are unable to work, and the bills are piling up. You've got that $40,000 hospital bill, hypothetically, and your PIP is now gone. And the driver on the other side has no bodily injury or very little bodily injury, and your claim is massively growing. How do you protect yourself? It's better to have it
right.
than not have it.
Yes.
And so I feel like we always stand on our soapbox and we talk about this over and over again, but that's because you should lend us your ear.
Yeah, and
listen to what we're telling you here.
For a moment, I thought you were going to share from your experience. I know you had started your career working for an insurance company in defense, right?
Oh,
you know,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
But that's so long ago. really.
They didn't teach me anything.
No. And the thing I think is amazing, they must not like uninsured motorists on the insurance side that much because it's not pushed.
It's not.
It's not pushed at all. So most people don't even really know what it is.
Exactly right. I have to explain it very, very often. And I often, of course, use the abbreviation. I say UM, and they're like, what kind of coverage is that again? And so, of course, we have to explain the UM versus the UIM or uninsured versus the underinsured, but essentially all the same. Mm-hmm. But you have to have bodily injury to even be able to add the UM to your coverage. So that's first issue. And then we talk about the different ways that you may still be entitled to it if you had the BI and you didn't reject it. And so there's so many different layers to this conversation.
So they don't want to sell it. So they don't really make enough money to warrant, and they are the insurance company is going to have a lot of exposure because obviously in a state like Florida, as we've talked so many times, there are just lots of people that don't have adequate coverage.
Absolutely. Right.
So I'm glad that we kind of harp on this because I do hope that people that hear this will take it to heart.
Right. Well, they say you have to hear something so many times before it begins to stick. I forget the number. Is it three? Maybe it's the rule of threes.
I think there are a number of different theories on that. They're always big numbers, and they're correct. You sure going to tell me a few times before I'm going to remember.
Yeah, so I hope our listeners, it's finally starting to stick that this is certainly something that's extremely important to you, your family, and, just driving home today, I'm sure you probably will see an accident, and that could easily be someone you love or yourself, and so it's important to protect yourself in that way. With that being said, I mentioned something. I want to just squeeze this question in before we go. We're talking about how sometimes accidents can be severe enough to the point that you can't work, and so a lot of times clients come in, they're like, I'm unable to work, I don't know what to do. There's two kind of situations that maybe you can look at, which is there's PIP, but is there also the possibility of maybe applying for Social Security disability? Is it too soon? How do you know?
In most instances, it probably will be too soon in the typical auto accident case. I mean, PIP will pay you 60% of your wages if your doctor gives you a note, basically,
right,
and up to the $10,000 mark, so there's a little bit of coverage there, but of course that's also got to go for your medical. Now if you have health insurance, that can take care of that maybe, but disability will only apply if you've got a situation so severe that it is apparent you're going to be out of work for 12 consecutive months.
Exactly. So there's no such thing as a short-term
disability. And many people most people don't know anything at all about the Social Security disability until they have to get involved with it. Right. Now, there are times when we would file under the 12 months when it's looking like maybe this is going to last longer, but it's a long process, so there's no short-term disability, and even if you do qualify, ultimately, it's a process that does take 18 months, 2 years, usually, kind of thing. So, so it's unfortunately, there are no quick answers to that problem.
Right, other than the PIP, which is a very small policy. With that being said, Lori, this has been a very interesting conversation. There's always seems like there's more that we could say.
There's always more to say.
Different things we could certainly get into, but of course we want our listeners to know that even after the conversation is over and we're no longer in the air, you can reach us at 727-796-8282. That's the number to the office. You can also find us on voiceoftheinjured.com. Take a look, see what we do and the different laws we practice in so that you can give us a call. It is a pleasure to come to you every Tuesday night. We will see you next Tuesday at 5 p.m. with FLA Law on the radio. Thanks, Lori.
Great.
Bye, everyone.
Enjoyed it.
WTAN, Clearwater.
FM 106.1.
WDCF, Dade City.
FM 102.3.
Listen.